Thank you, Steve. Hi, everybody. I'm Bill. That's Wendy. This is our show. We're 312-981-7200. I know from, you know, my wife is a woman, and both my daughters are women.
I love this beginning.
And here comes you, and you are a woman.
Thank God for remembering.
You've explained to me.
You're a jerk.
So with that said, let me just publicly say your hair looks very nice.
Thank you. You said this last time, too.
Well,
Who told you to be nicer to me?
I know from experience that if somebody does something semi-drastic to their hair,
it's not drastic.
It's best to acknowledge the fact that a change has been made.
You know, so, I would say semi-lovely, Bill.
It is it's not just semi-lovely.
I just got the gray taken out. I got it colored.
Yeah. But it,
a little highlight, a little low light,
yeah,
a little medium light.
It's three-dimensional now. It looks like it's coming right at me.
I can see it from here.
Keep ducking out of the way.
It's great.
Steve, duck out of the way. You'll get hit in the eye with Wendy's hair. But it looks shiny and manageable.
It looks so nice. I'd like to get hit in the eye with Wendy's hair today.
Yep.
It's too soft today.
What does that mean?
Well, I mean, like, I have very fine hair, and I don't mean fine like, wow, that's fine.
Oh, no,
it's fine, like, texture-wise.
Right.
I have a lot of it, but it's fine.
Yes.
So it looks better not freshly washed, because, you know, you need to get a little buildup so it gets bigger. I like big hair.
And you cannot lie. You know what I would enjoy is if there was a small wind machine in front of you.
I would like that as
well. Just kind of like you were at a beach and it was just gently blowing your hair back into the horizon. That would look stunning.
And then your lips would be going blah, blah, blah.
Wouldn't that be nice?
That'd be fun.
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Bill. Thank you for noticing.
It looks very nice.
All the boys in my house noticed yesterday, too. It's not that different. It's just a little darker at the roots, which, oddly enough, in the old days, you would do the opposite.
Right.
If your roots showed, you'd bleach them up.
Right.
I like my roots to be darker.
My wife had her hair cut 2 weeks ago, and I did not notice. And I've heard about it every day since.
See, that's the point, Wendy. It's not that we noticed. It's that we're afraid not to notice.
You have to notice. But a day has not gone by.
Notice?
It's been 2 weeks.
First of all, can I just say something, and no offense to any of us who have hair, but when you get your hair cut, when someone else blow dries your hair, it looks better than you will ever do it.
Oh, that's for sure.
So how can you not notice? Thanks, by the way.
You know why? Because they can do it behind your
head. Right.
And you can't
see that. Had one more arm, I would be really good with blow drying.
Yeah, and those three-way mirror things don't work either.
If you had one more arm, you'd be wasting your time here.
You'd be an octopi.
No,
I would be a
tripod.
A tripod.
Yeah, you'd be a tripod. That looks
just
good.
Just like you.
Yeah. Thanks.
I don't know. But one more arm would do it. You're right, because it's like I need...
Well, how do hairdressers do it? Most of your better hairdressers only have two arms. How are they pulling it off?
Well, they can see your whole head.
Yeah.
Oh, is that what it is?
Standing behind you. If I could stand behind myself.
Don't even. What about a mirror?
No, it's just harder to do because I'm right-handed, so I can do my left side really well.
Yeah.
But then when it comes to my right side, I'm surprised that people who do hair don't have forearms like Popeye.
Yeah, right.
Because they're just constantly blow-drying all their clients' hairs.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure you just gave Nick an entire half hour.
He doesn't have to come in now. just send him this.
Whatever.
He's done for the day.
Well, thank you for noticing. I'm sorry you didn't notice Terry's.
Oh,
I know you're making amends by noticing mine, because then you're going to go, did you hear the show today? Did you hear how I noticed Wendy's hair?
Yeah. Oh, that'll make it worse.
It will.
That'll make it worse. But she keeps referencing, like, she'll go, I know you don't like my hair, but, and then she'll
what
say
do
something,
you mean?
And I go, I do. And she'll go, well, how could you not have noticed? I guess I've been told it's 3 or 4 inches shorter than it used to be, but
that's tough to tell.
That's not a lot.
Like, well,
if it was a yard shorter, I'd go, oh, what happened to your hair?
She doesn't have a yard
of
hair.
No, she doesn't.
But that's why it would stand out.
Right, right. I married The Rock. When did that happen? But
stop while you're
if
ahead.
It's because to me it was for her it was a very subtle change. Although all of her friends have said, oh, they love it, and
they're girls.
I think that's what it is.
Girls always look at other girls' hair, shoes, and purses.
Yeah, I think there's something to that.
We always notice. I was looking at Sandberg's. I took a picture of her head yesterday, and she. I just wanted her.
Did she know you were doing?
Yes,
that?
Because she's very particular. She wanted to approve that I had a picture of her, and I said, I didn't get your face. I just got a portion of your hair because I want to go blonder. And she goes, let me see.
To me, that's even weirder.
I've taken pictures of people walking down Michigan Avenue because I like their hair color.
Wow.
Girls are like that. See, we notice each other's stuff.
Yeah.
All right, Jim, this might be worse. What is your situation?
Hi there. This took place about 35 years ago, okay? And I had a handlebar mustache. And, of course, we all know that if you don't notice your wife's new haircut within 30 seconds, you're in trouble.
Yes.
But I had a handlebar. And she cut that thing off. She cut it off. And if I stretched it out, it was a foot long from tip to tip. So all of a sudden one day I said, you know what, I think I'm done. I just cut she said, at least cut the ends off. So I cut the ends off. I told the kids not to say anything. 2 weeks later, we're eating supper. And she says, oh, you cut the ends off. How come she wasn't in trouble?
2 weeks.
Good point, Jim.
2 weeks.
2 weeks before she noticed the ends were cut off. That's exactly right.
So how did she justify, when you finally called her out on it, what was her reason for that?
No, we were all laughing so hard there wasn't any reason.
There wasn't time. All right. Wow. Wow.
But the I still married her anyway. After every 25 years, I took my vows.
Oh, that's nice.
Did you grow back the stash?
No. The mustache was there, but not the ends. Oh. No, I just cut the ends off. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you
very
much,
Jim.
We know. I don't notice sometimes
but
when Jim shaves.
But hasn't there ever been? I was just going to say. Every once in a while, you'll see somebody, not so much Jim, because you see him every day, but there'll be somebody you work with or you see regularly, and something's different, and you don't know exactly what it is, you know?
Yeah.
Right?
I do.
There's no, you have to come right out and go, I know something's different.
I know when I first started dating Jimmy Mack, we were friends for a couple of years first. We worked at the Loop Radio station
ended.
Together.
That's over.
No,
you're still friends.
I think if you start out as friends, you'll always be friends.
No.
You have a mutual respect going into the relationship.
Yeah, I agree.
So when I first started dating him, we worked at the Loop Radio station together, both Jim and I. And I'll never forget, there was a sales guy that found out, oh, you're dating Jimmy Mack. And I said, yeah, what's the problem? He goes, he's one of those guys that, you know, when he shaves, it grows right back like Homer Simpson. He always has that shadow. Mm-hmm. I'm like, are you kidding me? And I don't notice. Like, sometimes he has like the Don Johnson beard, and sometimes he'll do a soul patch, and I'm really bad at noticing. So,
do you remember there was an episode of The Office where somebody asked somebody if Stanley, that was the guy that was always doing crossword puzzles, they go, does Stanley have a mustache?
Oh. And
everyone in the office was divided on whether or not he did or didn't. And again, that was a guy they saw every day, but no one could remember if he did or didn't have a mustache.
I can't keep track of Jim's facial hair, because sometimes he does the Don Johnson, as I said, sometimes
stubbly look.
Is it a soul patch right here?
Yeah, in the middle of your chin, kind of upper chin.
Yeah, I get mine waxed, so I don't have that anymore.
Yep. Now, that we would I would notice that. Hey, no more soul patch. All right, let's take a break. Maybe when we come back, Eddie Money will be with us.
I would Wouldn't love that, be that tremendously.
Let's see if we can make that happen. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, Bill, I'm going to ask you a question.
Sure, go on.
Think back to high school.
Yes.
Did you have any rock and roll crushes?
Yes, Eddie Money. Love
there you go, Eddie.
Money.
He stole my crush.
Huge poster of him on my ceiling.
Eddie Money, how are you?
I'm doing really good. It's a little cloudy out here in California, but I tell you, we've got so many great friends in Chicago, and I really appreciate the fact you had me on the show. And continued success. Everybody loves your show. It's great, man.
Well, awesome.
WGN has always been you guys have always been on the corner. WGN has always been very good to Eddie Money, and I always have appreciated the station.
You know what else? What other radio station has been very good to Eddie Money? The Loop radio station, which we both worked at.
Sure.
I was a rock jock back in the day. And Eddie Money, you did a bunch of Loop rock shows. I must have seen you in concert 5 to 7 times.
It's a great. I love Chicago. It's a great town. I mean, I was so surprised when the Cubs came back. But I mean, even the Chicago airport. Where else are you going to get a Chicago hot dog? I mean, come on.
That's a good point.
I jones for those hot dogs. The sesame bowl. It's incredible.
Poppy seed. They're Vienna beef hot dog.
But hold the jalapenos.
Oh, you don't like the hot peppers?
I like the green. No, but the the green relish and the tomatoes, I go nuts for it. What do you think?
All right, so I cannot wait to see real money. First and foremost, you are a great rock and roller. You've been doing this forever. All your hits, we know every word to pretty much every one of your songs. And now,
I was blessed with.
Go ahead.
Yeah,
you were blessed with.
No, I was blessed with. With a lot of great tunes. I had like 23 songs in the top 100. I mean, I felt like a poor Billy Joel, for Christ's sake.
Did you think, Eddie, when you were starting out, did you ever dream of the success, the pinnacle that you would at some point reach?
Well, the thing is that Bill Graham was a great manager, and Columbia Records was on fire. And God knows how much payola went under the table, but all of a sudden it was on the radio.
Yeah, that's all right.
Which is very good. And then when I did that, when we did MTV, me and Huey Lewis, we were like the big stars of MTV television. I mean, yeah, we had a great career. I've had my ups and downs, but I sold they said maybe 32 million records, but guys, I should have saved the money. Who knew?
Huh? Well, so now you're going to do it.
How many?
You're going to do a reality series. I know we have a bad connection. I'm sorry.
No, it's me. I'm jumping the gun. The reality show was like, we did a show for Oprah. When Oprah wants you to do something, you do it. We did the show called Where Are They Now? And all of a sudden, the cameras are rolling, and my son is having a fight with my daughter, my crazy kids. And I went up to the room, and he had a half a bottle of booze under the bed. He had drank the other half, and I'm doing the middle of a TV show, and I was a recovering alcoholic, so I hit the ceiling and went nuts. And all of a sudden, they loved it. They thought it was great TV, so I don't know what the hell. Then this guy, Mark Cuban, who's a very nice guy, he owns the Dallas Mavericks. He's got a couple of kids himself. He said, do you want to do this show? I said, I don't really know, but I'm helping my kids' career out. My dad's, nobody sells records anymore. They don't even put CD players in cars. So I'm trying to do something for my son's career because eventually I'd love to retire,
Right, and he has a band. You have what, 5 kids and how many pets in your house?
We got too many pets. We got 8 dogs, which is really crazy. It's just we've got a Great Dane and I got a Staffordshire Terrier. And my son just got a name. I don't know what these kids, the Cocker Spaniel, the kids, they got to have their own dog. It just drives me crazy. But, the thing is, I feel kind of guilty because I love the dogs more than I love the kids.
Yeah, I just got a new puppy. We lost our 12-year-old Tiki, and we just got a new puppy. Can you come over and help me potty train him, Eddie? Because he's still missing the mark.
Tell me about it. I'm telling you the truth. You live over there. You put the papers down and you hope for the best,
We're talking with Eddie Money, the legendary Eddie Money. Eddie, remind me, I seem to think, and I could be wrong, but you came from a long line of police officers, right?
Yeah, my grandfather was a cop. My dad was a cop. My brother was a deputy inspector. I got a couple of nephews on the job. But, when I went on the police department, I couldn't believe how grumpy my father was because he was always working around the clock. And I wound up working 8 to 4s because I took typing in high school. I got thrown out of shop class.
Yeah.
Where it takes you 3 years to, takes you 3 years to make one of those salad bowls. I wound up, I was an old girl typing class. So when I went to police, I said, can anybody type? I held my hand up. So I was typing roll calls, working at 8 to 4. So I kept my rock band alive at night. And then the rock band moved out to California. Then I got in trouble on the police department, and I moved out to California. And eventually I got a deal with Bill Graham, and, the rest is rock and roll history.
Were they all on board with you going a different direction, not following law enforcement, but going into music? Was everybody good with that?
Well, when my kids got into the music business, I was pleasantly surprised when my son, Dez, brought me a tape of, he made a tape with my old bass player, and his music was really good, and it blew my mind. He was actually a really good songwriter. So I was thrilled out, and with this new TV show, what I'm trying to do is just help the kids out and get them started because, if you think about how many records that Taylor Swift or Imagine Dragons could sell, because people, all the great record stores like Tower Records and Peaches Records and Zipa Records, they're all closed down. Everything's online. You got to buy everything. It's a completely crazy world. And I got this new song called It's a Brand New Day with Waddy Wattell on guitar. It's a great song. And I wish I had the record out by now because I didn't realize a TV show was going to take off like it did,
Can't wait to see it. It premieres this Sunday night on Access TV, 8:30 Central Time this Sunday night. And you've been married for quite some time as well. Congratulations on that.
Well, I've been married 31 years. But Lori and I are going to be on TV next Thursday at 9:30. I don't want you to miss it.
All right. And love your work with Ronnie Spector. I got to see Ronnie Spector for her Christmas show here in Chicago, and she is amazing.
I love it so much. But, you know, the Phil Spector, he's still got his arms around her neck. There are certain venues she's not even allowed to play, and then she can't do that song, Be My Little Baby, or Frosty the Snowman.
Aww.
I mean, he's got a vendetta. But I tell you, Ronnie is amazing. She came out then. You know, she was actually hanging around with the Beatles when they came to New York, and they were singing at the Plaza back in 63. They were prisoners in the Plaza. They called up. They called her up, and she lived in Brooklyn, and she snuck them out of the hotel for a couple of days.
She's pretty amazing.
I mean, she was hanging out with the Beatles, and she's such a sweetheart. I love her to death. She really is fantastic.
Will she be making an appearance on Real Money?
I would hope so. If we get a season two, we'll see what happens. I mean, there's this one episode they did. They know that I hate horseback riding, and they did a horseback ride. They gave me the biggest horse, and this dog, this horse was in such a bad mood. I was trying to feed him some apples, and he going, you put that apple in my mouth, I'm going to take your fingers off. So I'm looking at this horse, and they got the TV cameras rolling, so I turn on going, you look really bummed out. Why the long face? I thought it was one of my better jokes on it. And another thing is my son's playing guitar, and for some reason it's 92 degrees on. And I say to my wife, it's 92 degrees out. Why does he have a wool hat on? You know, these kids with the hats
I know.
And stuff like that. They're not like we were coming up, but, you know, I mean, the kids, nobody ever leaves. I mean, I got five kids here that, I don't know. When am I going to have the empty nest? I'm wondering if that's ever going to happen. You know?
Eddie, it's better for your show. Trust me. It's Eddie Money, everybody. His new show is called Real Money. It premieres this Sunday, April 8th, on Access TV. Eddie, great to talk to you. Take care of yourself.
I will, but I got to tell you guys, when I took a Cialis, the $32 a pill, I took a Cialis the other day. I thought I was going to get lucky, but I forgot to empty the dishwasher.
We love you so much.
Guys, I didn't clean the counters. I'm sorry. Hey, listen, guys, have a great show, and thanks for having me on.
Take care, Eddie. It's Eddie Money.
God,
Wendy.
I love him.
It's Eddie Money. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll get you some news and then a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Thank you, Steve. Domiti Pongo will join us in about 15 minutes. He is in Memphis. As you all know, this is the 50th anniversary of the horrible incidents involving Martin Luther King, and we'll get a take on him there in Memphis, Tennessee. Last night on TV, the second episode of Roseanne aired, the second in the new batch of Roseanne's, you know, with a huge
revival. Isn't
the revival,
that what?
The Roseanne revival. You were out last week when we talked about it a little bit on the air. You've gotten to see both last night's episode and last week's episode, right?
There were two last week, right?
Two last week, yeah.
I was always one of the biggest Roseanne Barr fans in the whole wide world.
Mm-hmm.
I would have been president of her fan club if she would have had me.
Mm-hmm.
Loved the original Roseanne, was looking very forward to the new one, was worried it was going to suck.
Mm. Because why?
I just sometimes I don't.
Too much
I never
time passing.
Maybe.
I mean, it's been 20 years.
21 years. Isn't that amazing?
And
it's hard
changed,
to imagine.
I've changed a lot in the last 21 years, so I didn't know if I would still love it. I was very worried I wasn't going to like it. I never watched Will and Grace. I know people that did and do say it was great, like they didn't even miss a beat. I thought Roseanne was awesome.
Yeah.
I thought I loved the political strife they were having between Roseanne and her sister Jackie.
Uh-huh.
It's happening in a lot of families these days, and between friendships of people seeing different sides of the political spectrum. I thought it was funny.
Mm-hmm.
Wanda Sykes, we found out, writes for it, and Norm Macdonald.
Right.
I thought it was really strong.
You know, it's so funny because a lot of the criticism about the show was that it was way more political than people wanted it or expected it to be. I thought that was its strongest point because of what you just said. That's real. That's what's going on right now. There's families that are torn apart because of their political allegiances. Also, I would argue that All in the Family, which is probably the best sitcom of all time, built itself on exactly that. It was Archie Bunker and his family not seeing eye to eye about what was going on politically in the country. There's room for that.
Because it happens in more families than not.
Yeah.
And this last night's, the ratings are in. TV ratings, Roseanne, still strong, pulls 15.2 million viewers in week two.
That's still really good. It's nowhere near what it was a week ago, but there were, you knew there was going to be some fall off.
Right. I watched last night's. It's funny watching it with the kids because they haven't seen the original Roseanne, and now they want to go back and watch the original because they really enjoyed it. It was laugh out loud funny. Roseanne is Roseanne. To me, she was much more comfortable in episode two, where it didn't seem so scripted to me.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's a sitcom, and I know they're scripted, but she just seemed more natural.
Right.
And watching her deal with Darlene's children,
yeah.
I don't agree with the things Roseanne does, but she's staying true to her character. She's annoyed that Darlene might not be raising her kids right and wants to rule with an iron fist like she did.
Right.
And it's funny. Yeah.
And she has a bad knee.
I know. I can really relate to her.
I think they put that in there just for you, I bet.
A little awesome. Shout out to me.
Yeah, but that's what it was. I was trying to remember the last time there was a show that had, you know, Laurie Metcalf was just nominated for an Academy Award.
For Lady Bird.
Lady Bird, right.
She's great.
Can you remember the last time a show, especially a sitcom, just had an Academy Award nominee as one of the cast members? It's very, very rare.
It is rare. It
doesn't happen a lot.
And Jackie, if you watch the original Roseanne, was crazy. She was a cop. She tried a lot of different things. She was trying to find her way. She was very neurotic. She has pumped it to the next level now. It's really hysterical.
Yeah.
I love Laurie Metcalf. I think I was laughing out loud. And to me, that's a great sign.
It's so strange. I knew there'd be a little bit of... There's going to be a period where things aren't quite the way they used to be because, as we said, two decades passed. So it's going to take a little bit of time to get back into the groove of things. But for all indications, they're doing it, right? They're pulling it off. I would beg them to not lose the political edge. I love the political edge.
Although I was telling you off the air, and I have to find it, I was reading that Melissa Gilbert does something.
She's executive producer.
Yeah, and she is, I believe, on the liberal side of things and not a Trump fan, and kind of said that, just so you know, it's not going to be political anymore. We're not going to mention Donald Trump's name. You know, that was just something to introduce you to the characters. I didn't see any political things happening last night.
No. Huh. Interesting.
Different views. I mean, I think,
you know,
liberal conservative type of things, but not really pushing as much as they did week one.
Well, let's see in the next few weeks how it plays out. But I'm hoping, even though most people were saying, hey, I didn't turn this on to be talked to politically. That's not why I'm watching this show. That was my favorite part of it. I want more of that.
It was
not
real.
Less than that. Yeah.
Somebody just texted, haven't heard such an obnoxious laugh track since Leave It to Beaver. Is that on purpose?
It's possible.
Can I tell you, I don't even notice a laugh track anymore.
Don't you? It's very evident to me.
I really don't. I'm watching it and I laugh when I think something's funny. I'm able to tune that out.
So that show is not filmed in front of a live audience? Because I was under the impression that it was.
I don't know. That's just
maybe
what a texter
not.
Said. A lot of people liking it, but I don't know if I can't tell if anything's a laugh track. Do we have one on this show? Because we should get one.
Yeah.
You mean you can't tell if it's a laugh track?
I don't listen for it. I mean, I guess now if I go back and rewatch it, I'll be like, oh, yeah, that's it. I can just block that out and focus on the dialogue at hand. And if it's funny, I laugh. If it's not funny, I don't laugh.
So I don't think you guys did the numbers yet, right? 15.2 million viewers last night?
Yeah.
Still, okay. It's still a 17% drop, but...
But that's still really good. That's very good.
A drop was inevitable, right?
I mean, yeah, because there's that first week there's a curiosity factor.
Although, I mean, they got a lot of play. I bet there's some people tuning in for the first time last night too.
Yeah, I would think you're right.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
I hope it keeps going strong.
And there's only 9 episodes.
Yeah,
there'll be more.
They're saying more next season. And the next one on the block is Mad About You.
I want that so bad. No. God, I love that show. I wanted to be Paul and Jamie.
Well, Helen Hunt just said a few days ago that they're finalizing it. They want to make that one work. And both of Tim Allen's shows they're talking about bringing back.
I don't care about that.
I don't need that either.
So is this going to be what saves network TV
is going back and finding old gems.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
This is what we want. This is the baby boomer era. We want what made us swoon before. I mean, come on. The Buckmans had the best relationship in all the land.
It's what we want because we're the ones watching the network TV.
Right. Right. That's true.
No one under 40 is watching network TV, I don't think.
That's true. So why didn't the Love Boat work when it came back?
Maybe when it comes back.
Did it come back?
Will Bozo come back? Will Ray Rayner come back?
Ah, wouldn't that
Garfield
be nice?
Goose?
Wouldn't that be special? All right, we'll take a quick break. Then we'll check in with Domody Pongo. He is in Memphis, Tennessee. We'll find out what's going on there. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Pride in the Name of Love, a great song by U2. Of course, it is about the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr., but April 4th, shots ring out in the morning. That's not when it happened. Domody Pongo, anchor and reporter for this very radio station, WGN, is on the line with us. Domody, it did not happen in the morning, did it?
It did not. It happened on a rainy, not a rainy night. Actually, the speech he gave was on a rainy night, but it happened in the evening.
Bono is wrong, and we need to get him on the line.
All right,
so,
we'll take
Domody,
care of this.
Talk to Bono. No, right. Kidding. So
exactly.
You are out in Memphis right now. It's the 50th anniversary of the assassination of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and you've written a piece in the Chicago Sun-Times. It is out today. Talk to us.
Yeah, so I'm out here in Memphis. Today, the sanitation. And a reenactment of the march that the sanitation workers did when they marched from 4th and Beale all the way to Mason Temple. And Mason Temple is where Dr. King gave his last speech, that foreboding from the mountaintop speech. So right now I'm ducking off in the Peabody Hotel just to get away from all of the noise. But 1,000 or so marchers were out there. It was a campaign put together by AFSCME, a huge rally, kids out there singing. It feels more like a celebration. Which is kind of eerie when you think about it, to commemorate something as sad as the loss of King, but people are celebrating it as a rejuvenation of the fight for rights of labor unions and for workers. And kind of like this rejuvenation of the Poor People's Campaign that King started to put together in the tail end of his life.
I was curious, Domody, as to what the mood would be. You just mentioned it's almost celebratory. I was kind of hoping it would be that way. And as you just pointed out, it's hard to imagine somebody being assassinated that anything would be celebratory. But there is some cause for celebration here, isn't there?
It is, depending on how you look at it. Because in some respects, when I talk to people, it just depends on who you ask, because everyone comes from different parts of the country. I spoke to unions that came all the way from New Jersey. Local 43 is here. They brought about 80 members with them. And if you talk to them, they're celebrating a renewed opportunity to fight for the same thing that King fought for. Then you have others who are celebrating the fact that 50 years later, things aren't as bad as they once were. But then you have a whole other cadre of people who say, well, with the current political climate, we feel like a lot of King's message is being lost in the shuffle, and we feel like we're regressing in a lot of ways. So some people are looking at this as really sad experience and are looking to come down here for hope and kind of figure out what the next step should be. So if you walk through Memphis, up Beale Street, you'll see these signs that say, MLK 50, where do we go from here? And so, you know, not just the African-American community, but marginalized people, the working class, is trying to figure out how to mobilize, much in the way that King did back then, to take things further. So so many different ideas, so many modes of thought, but all coming together for one cause here.
Domody Pongo on the line with us live from Memphis. Have you visited this area before, or is this the first time? And if so, how much does it touch you right now?
Wendy, I've never been to Memphis, and this has been an emotional whirlwind. I think last night was really the toughest night, because, you know, you got, like, today feels much more jubilant. Last night, I don't know if you guys caught some clips, and some of you ran it in my news series. Dr. Bernice King, King's daughter, talks about how much her family has gone through since Dr. King was assassinated. She says, when Daddy died, then, you know, I lost my grandmother, and then I lost an uncle, and then, my brother Dexter isn't adjusting well to life right now. And she says, I want you guys to pray for me. I want you guys to understand what we're going through, because few people understand the trauma that we're going through. And it made me think about the kids of Malcolm X and his grandkids, and they have been going through a tumultuous situation. So these families get kind of ripped apart. Like, we who are kind of removed from them can look at this kind of as a celebratory thing, because King gave his life to the world, but that was in some ways at the expense of his immediate family. And I think that's something we can't forget either.
As you wrote about, King's children recount pain of losing their dad, and Martin Luther King III said to his father on that morning, what did he say?
He said, Dad, don't go.
Isn't that just heartbreaking?
Yeah, it is. It is. I do have to say, Domini, one of the highlights, you know, the rallies that were held a few weekends ago that were conducted by the high school students all around the country, when Martin Luther King's granddaughter came out and spoke, I thought that was one of the most touching moments of the entire day, didn't you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It really, I think, man, it's like King has become somewhat of a figure, of a deity, someone that we look at as almost not human, much in the way that we look at celebrities who, you know, aren't necessarily change agents, but anybody who's in the public sphere, we kind of forget about that. And when Bernice King was speaking, she kept saying daddy. And I know that was on purpose, but throughout the whole speech, she said, daddy would do this. Daddy would say, daddy would. I kind of forget that King is someone's dad, someone's brother, someone's son. And as you think about what he went through and how he's beloved now, it kind of reminds you of how badly he was hated at the time. And even now, some of the very people, and, you know, I've been talking to folks about this, you know, what do you think people would think about King today, or how would King look at society today? And they're like, well, honestly, if King was still alive, he wouldn't be loved. You know, Mark Harmon said yesterday when I was talking to him, people love the hate the marcher and love the martyr. So when people become martyred, then you love them. Then it's more easy to see, you know, look at Muhammad Ali. You know, once he was on the tail end of his protest, then the country history looked kindly upon him. But then if you look at Colin Kaepernick, who was in the midst of his protest, modern times isn't looking kindly on him necessarily, but history may. So I think the same thing happens to King. And when you think about it in that respect, it's kind of unfortunate that he doesn't have the opportunity to see the fruits of his labor.
That dream that he had, Domini, the I Have a Dream speech, will we ever achieve that, or is it just a dream?
I think it's very possible. When I look at thinking about the speeches, and you look at the marches for gun control, and you see those Parkland boys and girls who are of all races, actually predominantly white, and then you see people mobilizing in Chicago from the inner city that say, hey, wait a minute, we have a voice in this gun control thing, too, even though we experience gun violence differently from you. And then you have the Women's March and the Me Too movement, which some of these women wouldn't necessarily be thought of as, you know, economically disadvantaged. Some of these are well-to-do women who still go through the same things that oppressed people go through, and they're speaking out. And when you look at these different walks of life, figuring out how to move society forward, it makes you hopeful, and it makes you think that one day we will reach it.
I don't know. That's all I have is hope. That's all I have at this moment, and we have to have hope. What's on tap for the rest of the day in Memphis?
Oh, today is jam-packed at the Civil Rights Museum. It's going to be, let me pull out my itinerary, actually, because it's too much for me to remember offhand. I try to give myself too much credit, like I just know what was going on. But people are actually marching back to the Mason Temple, where King gave that last mountaintop speech. There's going to be a barbecue for the Unite Here marchers. That is all that's happening actually on the streets. And then at the Civil Rights Museum, you've got a ton of speakers. Father Michael Slager is in town, came out from Chicago. Reverend Jesse Jackson is in town. He's speaking today. A ton of Tamika Mallory, who is another women's rights activist, who is speaking today. A lot of organizers, a lot of speakers, a lot of inspiration, a lot of hugging, crying, laughter, love. It's going to be
perfect.
Great. Yeah.
Enough of every emotion. That's great.
Enjoy your emotions today.
Yeah, I'm a little overwhelmed. I don't know if you guys can tell. It is an emotional experience to be here. And I'm blessed to be able to experience this and report this for WGN.
You're doing a great job. The reports have been fantastic. So keep up the good work, Domati.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks
have a good rest
much.
Of the day. That's Domati Pongo from our news department in Memphis, Tennessee for the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Martin Luther King. We'll take a quick break, get you some news, and then more show. Dr. John Duffy joins us after the news. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Hi, Bill.
Wendy, look who's here. It's Dr. John Duffy.
You guys were having a little joke.
A friend of the show, we were having a joke, but not at your expense this time. We've learned from our mistakes. John Duffy, of course, best-selling author of The Available Parent, host of Undo Anxiety with Dr. John
Duffy.
It's
new, right?
Wait,
it's
new.
The title's
been changed.
Better.
Title's been changed, Bill. It's now Better instead of Undo Anxiety.
Better.
And you have a co-host.
Breaking news. I have a co-host. The lovely Julie Duffy is my co-host.
Are you related to her?
I am. I happen to have married her.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, shortly after we started the podcast, I thought I better propose.
That's a good move. That's a good move. All right. I need to ask you a question. There's a topic that we have for today that's really good, and we'll get to that in a second. But this is out of the news. I'm curious as to what you think of this.
Yeah.
We just had the shooting situation in California over at YouTube. It was a woman who was unhappy with YouTube's policies, and she went and she had a weapon. And you know the story. It's all over the place. All right.
Yeah.
So here's a question. They were talking about how it's very, very rare that a woman would do something like this, that almost always it's a guy. And the same is always said about mass murderers, that every once in a while you get a woman who's a mass murderer,
right,
but normally it's a guy. So what's different about a guy's brain that would do something like either of these things as opposed to a woman's brain?
So there's a couple of theories. One of them is straight chemical, testosterone. We are far more likely to be aggressive, right? You know, so that the argument is the most well accepted argument is pretty simple. Men have way more testosterone than women on average and are far more likely then to be aggressive kind of naturally, almost kind of back to fight or flight days and, you know, hunting and gathering.
But what about the governing part of our brains that would say, no, what you're about to do is wrong? Is that even a factor in this, would you say, or not?
In this case, I think that's something that people are going to want to look at because this is such an anomaly.
Yeah.
I think people are going to want to know, okay, what drove this woman to make this move because it's so unusual, because there's no good psychological reason backing it up.
Yeah.
But don't you think it's someone who has some form of mental illness to take it to this step, regardless of male or female?
Yeah.
The mental illness argument in the shootings has been an interesting topic, right? Because my community, the mental health community, has railed against the idea that the shooters are mentally ill. We're really wanting to talk about the guns, that we need to get rid of the guns.
Sure.
But the truth of the matter is, you do not do this kind of thing unless you are mentally ill. Unless there
is a normal thinking brain.
Exactly. Right. Guns may be a part of the problem,
yes,
the availability of them.
It's the combination.
But no doubt, the normal thinking brain does not make this kind of a move.
Is it because what would be considered a normal brain would figure out what the consequences would be? You'd say, well, this cannot end well. What's about to happen won't end well.
Absolutely that. Like, it won't end well for me. And there's also the moral, ethical part of the brain that you know, the vast majority of us have this, like, okay, I'm very angry. They're not paying me for my videos anymore.
Yeah.
I'm going to write an angry letter. I'm going to post a video that suggests that I'm angry. You know what I mean? Something other than, you know, actually going down and hurting somebody, maybe with an intent to kill them.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
That scares me that this is what this is over, is, you know, not getting advertising dollars from YouTube videos that you got before. It's just scaring me to think, look at this. Look what's happening to this world.
Right.
You're not paying me for my YouTube videos, where, you know, a YouTube video, anyone can be a YouTuber. My 15-year-old is.
Right.
Anyone can do it.
Right.
So it's just not right.
No, there's a slippery slope. I fear that's happening with the reasons for a mass shooting. You know, I'm not certain of this, but it seems like they're happening a little more frequently, and the reasoning seems far and far more tenuous to me.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, on to the real topic, and we only have a minute here or two, but set it up, and then when we come back, we'll discuss it at greater length.
Broadly speaking, in the past few years, I've seen this crisis of identity and self-worth among our young men and boys, to the extent that a significant portion of them who, by the time they hit 18 or 19, they are heading home from school, college, their freshman year, because they failed to self-regulate in some way. They drank too much, they smoked too much, they stopped going to class.
That was me. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm on the air. That's why I didn't make it at Illinois State, though.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't make it till Christmas.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So this is a massive phenomenon right now, and far more now boys than women. Young women tend to be doing really well and hanging in and, you know, and getting more degrees and more graduate degrees, whereas the men are floundering quite a bit.
Let's do this. We'll take a quick break and we'll figure out exactly why that's the case. Why are these numbers rising? Dr. John Duffy is here. If you have any calls,
if you have any questions.
If you have any questions, call us.
Or comments.
If you have any calls, question us. That doesn't seem right.
You can always question us. 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy. All right, John Duffy is here. Dr. John Duffy. He's a clinical psychologist. Listen to his podcast, formerly Undue Anxiety. It's now called Better, and it is better because his wife, Julie Duffy, is the co-host. Oh, sorry, John.
Although there's a text here, upset that you married a relative. Her name was not the same as yours until you guys got married.
I really don't want to explain
that. You don't owe anyone explanations.
We are going to explore boys and young men and going off to college. Their freshman year is not always easy for them. But before we get going, can I please take this phone call? Because I just think it might be interesting.
Yeah.
Is this Jeannie? Hi, Jean.
Janine. Hi, guys.
Janine. All right. So I believe like parent shaming is going to start right now.
Ah.
You know what? I just think the boys today are coddled. I put two boys to college. My youngest is finishing up the senior year. And his friends, I mean, the parents are still making their lunches, doing their laundry. And I said, what are we doing here, raising boys and men? I don't understand it. Well, and fortunately for me, my boys are not like that.
You're lucky.
Oh, you're definitely lucky,
well,
Jeannie.
No, you know what I did? I started this stuff in middle school, sixth grade. I taught them how to do laundry. They've been making their
Wait, so if you teach a boy to do laundry, he's fine for the rest of his life? Is that it? Because I'm late, but I'll do it.
No, I'm just saying, you got to start somewhere. So, and they're going to, you know, they're out on their own. My oldest is already out on his own plate. He can actually balance a checkbook.
John, are boys today coddled or not?
You know, I think there's some degree of truth to what you're saying, Janine. I really do understand your point because I know that this happens. It happens with a lot of the boys that I work with. The problem, I think, is even bigger than that because it's not just that the boys are coddled. I think they're kind of taught that they're part of the problem in high school and maybe middle school, and they don't really have a feel for what, you know, it means to be a man. So they're not really mentored very well. And I get that, like, having to do some things around the house is great. But also I think that parents, teachers, bosses, coaches, directors, aunts, uncles can also just spend some time with them, giving them some hope that they have the skills they need to create the future they want. Because a lot of boys are thinking forward and do not see a very bright future for themselves. And even if we empower them in the way that you're talking about, I don't know that they come away with the message that the future's bright and they're going to be able to manage it. And I think that's part of the problem that we run into with these kids when they hit 18 or 19 years old.
Right. But I was just thinking, you know, you got to start somewhere. And, you know, fortunately, my kids were good students, so I didn't have to worry about that. They didn't get in trouble at school. So I don't know. Maybe it's a combination of everything, but I do. I feel very blessed at how they are becoming young men. I really do.
And part of that blessing is that they're good students. You know, a lot of boys are labeled as problems in the classroom, and so they never get that kind of look from the teacher where it's like, you know, I value you, I value your contribution in this class, and sometimes that becomes part and parcel of the problem as well. And by the time they get to college, they already feel this lack of self-worth, self-esteem, you know, their ability to contribute positively. And so they just distract themselves with things that make them feel good, like video games or smoking way too much pot or not going to class and just hanging out with the guys in the fraternity.
Janine, thank you very much for calling. You got great boys.
Thank you. Have a good one.
You too. You mentioned that sometimes, well, boys are treated differently. There's been several studies. Time Magazine had a big article and cover story on this.
Yeah.
The majority of elementary school teachers are women. So if you're a boy and you're talking in class, you get in trouble. If there's a group of a gaggle of girls talking, they don't get in trouble. I've seen it.
It's true. I mean, it's true. And I don't think it stops in grade school or middle school. I think this kind of continues through high school. And maybe this was true a generation ago, but now I think boys are keenly aware that they are seen kind of as second class. They're aware the kind of girls are winning the education race, you know what I mean? More girls are in college and make it through college now and graduate school as well. And so these boys are floundering a bit. And I think a lot of them feel like, boy, I need to do what my dad did, stiff upper lip, you know, be a man, just pick a career and go for it. And yet, because this is a more kind of a more thoughtful, sensitive generation, a lot of that doesn't resonate with them, you know? And so they struggle with like, well, then what should I do? And is there a bright future for me where I can make a living and have a family and do all the things that my dad did?
Yeah.
It is a different time.
Yeah.
Is this salvageable? Is there some way to fix this?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it's not only salvageable, I think it's easily salvageable, to be honest with you. I think it just takes a few moments from somebody in some kind of a mentor capacity to spend time kind of looking in the eyes of these kids and saying, hey, you know what? I know that there's been some trouble in your life. I know you're getting D's. You're capable of A's and B's. I know you can do better than you're doing, but just know that I have faith in you.
Yeah.
And sometimes kids don't, because the world's super busy.
Right.
And there's so many kids in so many classrooms, and we don't often take that opportunity. But when we do,
yeah,
it makes all the difference. We were talking to my son's swim coach recently, my wife and I, and he makes sure that he takes a moment with all 65 guys on his team just to give them 65 guys,
wow,
just to give them that moment where they have his undivided attention.
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes it doesn't much matter what he says. He's attending to them. He's aware of them.
It validates you.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a validating moment.
So is it up to the school to provide somebody like you just described, or is it up to the person to find somebody on the outside that can kind of coach them, teach them, and mentor them?
I think what I would love to see is kind of a call to arms for almost any adult who has contact with boys in this age group, you know, let's say from 15 to 25,
mm-hmm,
to give them a moment. Not that you can't say you're disappointed in where they are, or they need to work harder, or they need to party less or something like that, but I think it's also important to say, hey, you, I value you, I have a lot of respect for you, and I know that there is a bright future for you,
right,
and anything I can do to help, let me know.
All right, we don't have a lot of time, so Bob, I'd like you to get to your point as quickly as possible. We have a minute. Okay. Go.
Okay, so I think that in general, men, the whole gender is kind of under attack. You don't need them anymore, and I think that's part of it. I mean, you don't need them as head of household. It's on TV. It's in the news. There's no place for them that used to be.
I get your point, Bob. You know, kind of the Homer Simpsoning of men, right? That men are kind of dumbed down a little bit culturally. Here's what I like to think. I like to think that the fact that women are doing well, and finally we are empowering girls and women in the last year or two in ways that are kind of unprecedented, I don't think that has to be a lose for boys and men. You know, I think that this can be a win-win all the way around. I think men might not be necessary in the way that they've been playing their roles to date. So there is this opportunity to kind of shift the roles and balance them out in a way that works really well for everybody. We just have to be really, really attentive to it.
It's not that you're not needed anymore, Bob, but I know it sounds from the way you say this as you don't feel needed anymore. You're not the head of the household, but why can't, you know, you both coexist and you both run the household together?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and just one last really quick point. So I have a very, very gifted son. I mean, off the charts, 100th percentile, et cetera, et cetera. He's in college, but he couldn't get into the real selective schools. First was Legacy, second was, and we were told flat out, you're a white male. And, you know, if you were a minority,
a person
or
of color.
Female,
yep, yep.
Yeah. And that was crushing because he's been always, you know, at the top of everything, and including sports. I mean, he did it all. But One thing about him, he's got that frontal lobe development, you know, that these genius kids get where it's not quite developed. But he just couldn't get into the school.
And that's not fair, and that happens, doesn't it, John?
It happens, Bob, and you know, and it sounds like you have a brilliant guy in your hands, and this is an opportunity for him to adapt to a circumstance that's less than perfect, which probably he has not had to run into in his 18 or 19 years of life. It's a tricky thing to do because he knows, like, maybe I belong at a higher tier school, but I'm always impressed when kids can adapt to circumstances that are unexpected.
Good luck to you, Bob.
Good luck, Bob.
And thanks, you are Bob. Appreciated. We need you, Bob.
Okay.
That was like a verbal hug, Wendy. That was beautiful.
So sweet.
There's a tear in my eye from that.
I like people.
That was excellent. Dr. John Duffy.
What's wrong with you? I'm nice and the world falls apart. Jeez.
My tongue called in sick today. Dr. John Duffy has a podcast. It's called Better. It used to be Undue Anxiety, and then the show got better because he added his wife. How do you like that? Listen to it on WGN Plus. His book is called The Available Parent. It's available wherever books are sold. Thank you, John. Appreciate it. We'll take a quick break, get you some news, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Oh, that's pretty.
Is that you playing Schroeder?
Yeah, that's me. Could you move my Beethoven bust just a little to the left? Because my piano's going to tilt over if you don't.
How do you sit at that little piano?
It hurts my back. I'm not going to lie to you. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and Wendy. Do we have tickets to give away to an exciting show, Wendy?
We do. Brian Regan is a funny, funny man.
Boy, is he ever.
He
so
really
proud
is.
Of him.
Boy, you got to jump on these things early. We have a pair of tickets to see comedian Brian Regan at the Chicago Theater, and it's happening New Year's Eve.
Let's get those tickets out now.
I cannot plan that far in advance.
Almost time. New Year's Eve.
I talk about anticipatory anxiety. That is like, I don't know.
That would destroy you, wouldn't it?
Oh, my God.
That far in advance where you had to be.
It's a Monday night, December 31st. It's an 8 o'clock show. Vanity Fair called Brian, quote, the funniest stand-up alive.
I'm telling you, he's
pretty funny.
He's way up there. He's really good.
This Friday, April 6th at 10 a.m., tickets start going on sale at the Chicago Theater box office, all Ticketmaster outlets, and Ticketmaster charge by phone.
For a New Year's Eve show. Oh, the people from Tree Time are coming in, Wendy. They want to set up the tree.
Don't. I'm having agita.
Come on in, fellas.
How do you want to do it? A lot of people are trying to call.
I would say
random. Let's go random.
A certain number caller.
I like the way you think.
Yeah.
What number are you thinking?
I don't know that this has ever been done in radio history before, but let's just say caller 15 right now. If you're caller 15 at 312-981-7200, you will see Brian Regan, considered by many to be one of the funniest people alive.
Well, Vanity Fair, in fact, calls him the funniest stand-up alive.
Oh, the funniest stand-up alive.
Yes.
Who's the funniest dead stand-up, did they say? Did Vanity Fair say?
George Carlin.
Yeah. Good call.
Don't you think?
Good call, VF. Yep.
Good call what?
VF, Vanity Fair.
Oh.
I don't have time.
I thought you called me that.
No, I'm getting ready for New Year's Eve. It's right around the corner, Wendy. I don't have time to say things out loud. I just say their initials.
Can you plan ahead that far in advance?
No. Although,
can I talk to him?
For a big show like this, I would do my best to.
All right, Bill, here, I'd like to introduce you to somebody. Hey, Joe, where are you calling from?
Willow Park.
Joe from Villa Park, home of the first original Portillo's.
Is that true?
Yeah, I didn't know that. I didn't know that.
It's their birthday today, by the way.
I heard Kim Gordon do a report.
Yeah,
it was the hot dog hut, wasn't it, in Villa Park?
Wow, paying attention. Very nice. Joe, have
you
ever seen Brian Regan before?
Never.
You're in for a treat.
And I've already made reservations for dinner at 7 and for New Year's Eve, so I'm all set.
Wow.
Well, no, you're going to have to change it because this is an 8 o'clock show. Where are you going, to White Castle? Can you get in, get out?
Portillo's.
Okay. Oh,
wow, that worked out nicely, didn't it?
All right, well, Joe from Villa Park has no anticipatory anxiety. Joe, hang on, we'll get your vitals and set you up. A pair of tickets to see comedian Brian Regan. It's happening at the Chicago Theater on New Year's Eve.
Mm-hmm.
How many days away, Bill?
It's coming soon.
Monday, December 31st. It's an 8 o'clock show. And tickets go on sale this Friday morning, April 6th at 10 a.m. You can pick them up at the Chicago Theater box office, all Ticketmaster outlets, and Ticketmaster charge by phone. And I believe on Friday, we're going to have another pair pair of Brian Regan tickets give away. Tomorrow, we are going to be out at Cork and Kerry, which is right on the south side. What?
Do you keep wanting to say Cork and Cleaver? Was there a restaurant called Cork and Cleaver at some point, or am I imagining that?
No.
I think there was a Cork and Cleaver. I think it was part of Steak and Ale.
Yeah. Kim, thank you. Yes. I think so, too. Because every single time I'm ready to say Cork and Kerry, my brain goes, say Cleaver. And I go, no, it's not right. It's Cork and Kerry.
Yeah, I think that was part of a chain. It was Steak and Ale and Cork and Cleaver.
That sounds right. That sounds right. Wendy, you gave me a look like I'm from outer space when I said that.
Well, no, but this is not a very good promotion for Cork and Kerry.
No, but I'm just saying, like, there's been several times I'm supposed to read an ad for them, and I always go, I think it's Cork and Cleaver, isn't it? But it's not. It's Cork and Kerry. So go there if you want to see us tomorrow.
Don't remember that.
Yeah. That's where Kim and I used to have dinner.
But Kim,
you weren't allowed in.
I did. I know. I shouldn't
have
been.
You had a bad attitude.
I had no shirt on.
Right.
Or shoes. Kim, I heard you mention it's 55 years ago that Dick Portillo started his little hot dog hut in Villa Park. And
yep.
Lo and behold, Portillo's bloomed and blossomed.
It's a giant now.
Yeah. And now you can get the chocolate cake with an entree.
Today.
For 55 cents.
But you have to eat it there, right?
Or
carry
take out.
Yeah, you can't.
What's the other option? I heard that report earlier this morning.
You can order online. So if you order online, you can't get the 55 cents or get it delivered because Portillo's delivers.
Right.
So online orders and delivery doesn't count.
Right. Who delivers? Really?
I think some of them do.
Like a Grubhub or something like that.
Or an Uber Eats.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Or Cork and Cleaver.
I don't ever have to leave my house.
Never.
No, the days of going outside are over.
Oh, my God. I could get a Portillo's hot dog with... I can't get the 55-cent chocolate cake, though.
That's the deal breaker for you?
I could get Q-tips. Not from Portillo's.
Portillo's doesn't have Q-tips.
No, but you can order anything from anywhere online and it comes to your house.
Yeah.
It kills me. Dylan, my son, orders stuff on Amazon and you can, for certain things, you can do same-day service. It's usually some kind of game console cord that he can't find.
Mm-hmm.
He finds it on Amazon very cheaply.
Mm-hmm.
And it's at our house in like 6 hours.
It's a miracle.
I know, like on a Sunday, big white van pulls up.
Yep.
And they're very pleasant. Ding dong, Amazon, okay.
Is it the van from Breaking Bad?
It looks like it.
Make sure you check the contents of that package before you let him play with it. Just be safe.
Maybe he's got a whole system going on
right.
now.
Maybe
he's
does.
An entrepreneur.
Maybe he does.
Huh.
Who knows? You know who I'd love to talk to is Tom Skilling.
Can we make that happen?
Wouldn't that be fun? Let's see if we can talk to Tom Skilling, see if we can have him delivered here to the studio in the same day. We'll talk to Tom Skilling next. He's got a big TV special coming on tomorrow night. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
This
Wendy.
Is Chicago's very own
Bill.
WGN
this is Chicago's very own TV news at 9.
No, it
it's
is
It's also
not.
The 70th anniversary, 7-0, hard to believe, of WGN television and all the great things they've done. And you said to me a few weeks ago, they should do a special and Tom Skilling should host it. And I said, although we'd never do something like that. Well, they are doing it. And here's Tom Skilling to tell us more about it. Hi, Tom.
Hello, guys. How are you? It's always fun to talk. We don't do this near often enough.
Well, you're welcome anytime. I know Ro tries to hog you, but we would like to have you anytime.
Oh, thank you, Wendy. I'll tell you what, it's always fun talking to you guys. And we're excited by this program. I was kind of surprised to be asked to host this, but you know...
Why were you surprised, Tom? I can't think of who better to host this than you.
Well, I'll tell you, that's nice of you, Bill. I don't know. We have so many amazing people. The bench strength at our television station is so amazing. You know, the history of WGN-TV is kind of the history of our area. And it's one in which all of us, or most of us, have participated in one way or another. I was just thinking of all the people that have, aired on WGN. Jack Brickhouse, Jack Taylor, John Drury, Marty McNeely, Harry Volkman, Floyd Brown, Family Classics with Fraser Thomas, Bozo, of course, Cookie, Wizzo, Ray Rayner, and the Cubs, the White Sox, the Blackhawks, the Bulls, you name it. So it's pretty amazing. And then our current group, Dan Rowan, Paul Conrad, Pat Tomasulo, Dean Richards, Larry Potash, Robin Baumgartner.
My girl Robin, yep, can't forget her.
Yeah. I know, she's terrific, and Micah Mateer, among others. So I'll tell you, this program's going to involve a lot of folks, but it's going to cover a lot of ground and a lot of history that has been made by this amazing television station.
It's on Thursday night, just so everybody knows. Oddly enough, on WGN-TV.
Oh, really?
I know. Isn't
strange
that weird how that works?
That. Yeah.
8 o'clock. Huh. Don't miss it.
So, Tom, the way this works is...
Go ahead, Bill. I'm sorry.
That's all right. You don't have to apologize. You're the host of this, and then you'll kind of tip it off to some of the other luminaries who you just mentioned, and they'll have their own segments, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting. WGN played a role in the inception of game shows on television, music programs. We were instrumental in the start of news coverage. And, you know, so it's an amazing operation. And you'll, I think, find out a lot of interesting things about WGN that maybe many folks didn't know. Steve Novak is a genius, our producer and director who put this together. Also the president of NATIS, our radio television association here. We call him President Steve for short.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's nice. What was something that you say a lot of people won't know? What's something that you kind of learned while making the show that even you didn't know?
Well, you know, I think the role that WGN played in things like game shows and their start on television. I mean, we popularized a lot of those. Of course, we pioneered in many respects live sports coverage with our Cubs broadcasts and Jack Brickhouse's role. I remember my kid, my father, talking about how when he was growing up, he listened to Jack when he'd be flying and doing both the Cubs games and the White Sox games, and often the two would kind of overlap, so he'd have to get on a plane and make it from one ballpark to another one to do the broadcasting. And, you know, I remember when I was in high school out in Aurora, we had an auditorium that was built on our high school out there that had unique, I guess, acoustic characteristics. And so WGN saw fit to... taped the Miss Illinois pageant out there. And I remember the excitement. This is back before we had microwave and mini cams and all the rest. So this helicopter landed in our football field out there and would pick up the first half hour of the tape as it was recorded out there in a production truck and fly it into Chicago for airing. Then it would fly back out and pick up the second half hour tape and put it on the air. So for near real-time television back, and that's not all that long ago. That was back in the 1960s. So
we've come a long way.
We have, Bill. There's no question.
Tom, how long have you been at WGN?
You know, it's going on 40 years now.
Jeez.
Well, they better give you a TV special for the 40th.
You know what? I'm just glad the body gets up every morning and one foot in front of the other. You know, the horrible thing, or maybe it's the wonderful thing, I don't know, about this business is they've got a photographic record of your gradual physical demise. You know? So it's kind of embarrassing to look at these early pictures there and think, why? What happened?
Yeah.
The aging process is alive and well, you know? It seems like such an abstract concept to us all that we're going to get older, and then you see pictures, and
that
I can attest
it.
To the fact. Yeah, it really works. It is happening.
Yeah, but I think we're getting better looking as we get older, because, you know, you think back in the 80s and the 70s even, and some of the bad clothing choices we made.
Yeah.
I think we're looking more classic lately.
I think you're absolutely right, Wendy. You know what? And speaking of that, I remember when I started in 1978 at WGN, they had us wear these blazers on the news. We had each of us was issued three blazers, one gold, one horrible green-colored thing, and one that was brown. And I have one arm that's slightly longer than another one, so I went to this tailor to get the arms adjusted. And the guy says to me, too cheap. Material too cheap. I can't, alter it. And so,
right, it'll fall apart if you put new stitches in it.
I know. And, you know, it's funny. The word was that John Drury, when he signed on with us, had it written in his contract that he wouldn't have to wear those things. And so that marked the end for the rest of us, too, and wearing those blazers. But they were very popular, not only at our station, other stations, too.
Oh, my God. That was part of the news team where everybody had the same blazer. It looked like either Century 21 or the golf game.
Yeah, right. Same.
I know. With a big low logo sewn on it, you know, and yeah, it was pretty cool.
I know, Tom, there's going to be a lot of magical moments from the past featured in a lot of television shows that we all remember fondly, but please tell me they're going to devote at least 1 minute or two to creature features. Are they going to?
You know, I believe they are.
Oh, good.
Because it was one of the, you know, highlights of our early days. As, you know, obviously it was Bozo and Ray Rayner. I remember when I started, the way you were introduced to the Chicago audience as a newcomer was I was sent out to the ballpark with Jack Brickhouse, and I remember George Will was in the booth at the time, an avid baseball fan. That was kind of cool. Also very intimidating. And then on the morning show, you were put on with Ray Rayner. And Ray would be there. It was all ad lib, you know, live television. I remember the stagehands would be sitting off in the at the side, reading their Sun Times or Chicago Tribune, and screaming insults at Ray all through the show. And the viewers couldn't hear that, but they did hear Ray would respond to these things. And I remember thinking, wow, so this is the big time, huh? This is how it's done here, having come down from Milwaukee. But it was fun to watch those shows produced.
Tom, Ray also had a show in the afternoons where he was on a spaceship, and he punched buttons and cartoons would come up. Did they show that at all? I don't remember the name of it. But
I don't know. I don't remember seeing that.
I remember that.
I don't remember that happening. I remember when I moved in here, our family lived out in New Jersey when I was little, and we moved here when I was in seventh grade.
Yeah.
And my friend would always interrupt whatever we were doing and to see Bozo at 12 noon. And I can remember going into work every day, you'd have an audience lined up for the Phil Donahue show that aired at 11 o'clock. So they were in the hallway at 11, and then at just before 11. And then right as soon as they were moved into Studio 2, the Bozo group assembled, and they were ushered into Studio 3. So it's pretty amazing to think in day, two live television shows so close together with studio audiences.
Yep.
It was pretty amazing.
I remember Diver Dan. That's not what you're thinking about.
No, that's separate. It was Ray Rayner on a spaceship. And then also Bob Bell, who played Bozo, had a show called Andy Starr, where he was an older guy also showing cartoons.
Bill, you have an amazing memory.
Oh, thanks.
I remember Jelveston, the duck, in the cage out in the hallway. And I thought, what's this poor duck? I always felt so bad for him out there. I you know, because he was such a quiet little animal, but a big part of the show.
Yeah.
Was Cuddly Dudley on?
It was on Ray Rayner.
Oh, I loved Cuddly Dudley.
Hi, Ray, and how are you today?
Oh, you're bringing me back. Do you get weepy when you're hosting this, Tom? Because all this nostalgia.
Oh, I know. It's amazing. And Cookie. Everybody loved Cookie.
Sure.
Hey, Tom, it's Bertrand. Did they keep Cuddly Dudley tied up in the hallway, too?
No, Steve, as far as I know, the only thing I saw caged there was Chelvis.
Thank goodness. Tom, we'll certainly be watching. It's the 70th anniversary of WGN-TV, hosted by our friend Tom Skilling, and that's tomorrow night on Channel 9, oddly enough, at 8 p.m. Central Time. Tom, thanks so much for hanging out with us.
Guys, a pleasure to talk to you. Always fun. And keep knocking them dead, guys.
Thank you, Tom. You as well.
Thank you, Wendy. Take care.
Bye, Tom. The great Tom Skilling.
God, I love him.
Yeah, he's a nice man. All right, Wendy and I are headed toward the stream, but Steve's going to be here for the Wintrust Business Lunch. He'll tell you what he has next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.